to Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
You sure you don't want to go? You sure you don't want to give it a try?
Welcome to Spark Your Fire podcast. This is Jazz here, testing the opening of Spark Your Fire. David has put me on the spot. How was the intro? I'm sure I missed something there.
Nah, mate, I reckon. It's natural. Like, all you need to do is just make it natural, right? Like, there's no script or anything, and that's been one of our policies in relation to this podcast. So, you know, I don't think there's any right or wrong, and I just thought it would be good to mix things up a little bit from time to time.
You just like to put me on the stop.
Like you do that all the time to me too, mate. Likewise. Likewise.
It's a lot of stuff coming out, David. Obviously, we know a Royal Commission is out of the way. Interest rate, two interest rate drops, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, that's a separate story. But something else happened last week, which is the assessment rate has dropped as well. Now, before we jump into discussing that part, what is assessment rate for our listeners quickly?
So assessment rate is essentially how lenders calculate your repayment capability, and it's part of the benchmark that they use in order to determine what your borrowing capacity is.
So let's say the interest rate is 3.74. Bank is not calculating it at 3.74. Tier 1 lenders, or let's just call it big four banks, were calculating more at 7.25 or higher.
That's right.
Was the assessment rate. So even though you were actually able to make the repayments, you were not able to pass the serviceability test, which means you were not able to get the loan. But now that rule has changed. And what's the new way of calculating the assessment rate, David?
So it will depending on lenders, but you know, the trend that we're seeing now is APRA essentially has removed the floor rate. What they call is like the floor rate is essentially the minimum assessment rate that any lenders should be using. They've removed that as of start of July, and that was official announcement from APRA. And their suggestion on as a guidance to lenders is, yes, we're happy to remove the 7% floor rate, but we need you to bump up the buffer rate from 2.25%, which was the old testament, to 2.5%. Okay, so that's why, that's just give a couple examples just so that I reckon our listeners will understand a bit better. First, the first one to announce the change to the assessment rate is ANZ. They've dropped the floor rate from the guided 7% to 5.5%. Okay, so in other words, they cannot use a lower assessment rate than 5.5%. Right. Now, the buffer rate, they did follow the guidance to improve from 2.25 to 2.5%. Now, back to your example, Jazz. Let's say, for example, someone has got a owner-occupier loan with ANZ paying 3.47% owner-occupier PNI. Then that means there's two ways to assess it. One is you add the actual rate, 3.47, plus 2.5%, the buffer rate, which gives us about 5.97, close to 6%. And you compare that against the floor rate, which is the 5.5%, and you use the higher of the two. So in this case, the one that's closer to 6%, so the actual plus the buffer rate will be higher. Therefore, that one is going to be adopted. So instead of being assessed at 7.25 before, which is early July, now ANZ's change is already in place. So you will be assessed at the actual rate plus the buffer, which basically indicates, I mean, this is a very rough, just based on my calculation, for owner occupiers, there's an improvement of about 10 to 15% borrowing capacity because of that change. For investors, we're looking at about 5 to 10%.
The people who were at the boundary line in the past who got rejected, it's probably a good time now for them to sit down with their broker once again and work out whether they can borrow the money or not, whether it's to do a top-up to make a purchase or whether it's to buy your first place. But essentially, the calculators that brokers use to figure out whether how much you can borrow and whether you can borrow or not, they are now being updated by all these lenders. I was just speaking to Macquarie before, and they are updating their calculator as well. By putting a buffer of 2.5%, so rather than calculating at 7.25 or whatever their assessment rate was, Now they will be just interest rate plus the 2.5. So yep. The calculators are getting updated. Point is basically if you have been rejected in the past, now is probably a good time to do a test again, because there's a good chance that it might work depending on how big the gap was.
And I think it's actually quite a smart move in a sense, because, you know, the reason that why I said it actually benefits owner-occupier more, because that's essentially what the guidance has been. You know, if you think about it, the gap of, you know, 7.25 versus what the actual repayment, say 3.47, is huge. And, you know, with RBA dropping consecutive rates in June and July already, with further to come later this year, the indication here in general is that the low rate environment is going to be here to stay. So, you know, APRA has been hammered for a while by everyone to say, look, it doesn't make sense to have such a huge discrepancy. You know, it's putting a pressure onto the owner occupiers as they were getting assessed a so much higher assessment rate than what they call is common sense approach. So they're getting assessed so much higher, therefore they cannot afford to borrow as much, and therefore they are struggling to get into the market, such as in Sydney, in Melbourne markets in particular. And that's why Sydney and Melbourne market has been tanking. I shouldn't be saying tanking, have been correcting to a degree, 10 to 15% in the last 12 to 18 months. But, you know, they don't at the same time. So APRA has been tasked the duty to make sure that the owner occupiers are benefiting from this. But at the same time, they don't want to let the investors go lose again, just like the pre-APRA 2015 period, where everyone was just getting interest-only loans and investors can simply buy a high-yield property and just keep recycling your borrowing capacity and keep growing. So they obviously don't want that to happen. They don't want the investors to go lose. So, you know, by actually using the actual rate plus buffer rate, that's actually quite a smart move, I have to admit, because as I mentioned before, it actually allows the owner occupiers to benefit significantly from increasing a 10 to 15% borrowing capacity. So for those who before weren't able to get into their first home, now they potentially can. Whilst for the heavily geared property investors, you know, with like five or six, i.e. us, Jazz, we unfortunately probably doesn't benefit us as much, but you know, it will still help, but only in the realms of about 5 to 10%.
And I don't know whether you remember David or not, but in one of the only few episodes out, I think we're talking 3 or 4 episodes back, we actually did discuss how the market was turning, that it's a turning point. I think yes. The episode itself is called Property Market Turning Point. And there was a reason we did that episode, because we saw some of the changes that were coming in. We knew that Royal Commission was out of the way. We knew the interest rate drop was coming, most likely. And we knew that there was a possibility of change in the assessment rate. So all of that has played out as expected. And we are seeing a change in the market sentiment, especially dealing with the clients nowadays, because we can obviously the number of inquiries that have gone up. If you speak to the real estate agents, they are painting a good picture now of the market. So it's all a good news if you are planning to buy a property, doesn't matter where in Australia, especially in Melbourne and Sydney, that have already bottomed out to some extent and are pretty much now at the start of the recovery.
That's 100%. And I think, you know, that's the same thing with all the reports that that has been released as well. Like I think ANZ report has 2 months or 2 or 3 months ago was quite pessimistic about the property outlook. And just in a shorter period of time, you know, I think they've just released their one in early July again, and that's done 180. They're now expecting at least a moderate growth in the next 3 years. And same thing with BIH Oxford. You know, I think they released an update report earlier this month as well, predicting Sydney, Melbourne single-digit growth in the next 3 years, but Brisbane with 20% growth potentially in the next 3 years. So, you know, definitely the sentiment has changed significantly since the election. And, you know, with all these good news that's coming out, interest rate dropping, assessment rate dropping, making it easier to borrow, that has improved the consumer confidence significantly.
Look, media is media. I bet you in 3 months' time, there will be at least a handful of newspapers that will be that will have a news published as a headline. Are we in the boom territory once again? So from a bust to boom within 3 months' time, I guarantee that there will be at least one or two newspapers.
How many Bitcoin are you putting on that now?
Bitcoin is pretty expensive, so I can put a part of Bitcoin, which is Satoshi.
1/10.
Right now, Bitcoin is in the boom territory, it looks like. But it has done a bust. Bitcoin boom and bust is another story. It booms one day and the next day it busts. That's another chapter to be discussed. So that's good, man. So that was some of the news that we covered. All good news for the people who are planning to make purchases in the next coming months. And
not all the lenders have released that yet. You know, I think, as you said, Jazz, I think Macquarie updated theirs. They got a floor rate of about 5.3%, one of the lowest. Yeah. Westpac is 5.75 floor rate, at the same time 2.5% buffer. So similar to ANZ, but slightly higher in terms of the floor rate. And I'm sure in the next couple of weeks, you know, CBA and NAB will also be releasing theirs along with other lenders. So, you know, keep watching this space. And, you know, just it will be a good time to definitely reach out to your broker, have a chat about, you know, especially for those who are looking at improving their loans. Potentially, there's some very attractive interest rates at the moment that you could that could save you a fair bit. So by freeing up that borrowing capacity, that means you are potentially be able to refinance to a different lender or bring it up from the likes of Pepper, Liberty, back into the second tier or the first tier. So it's good news for everyone, I have to say.
Exactly, that's awesome. So that was the news part, mate. Now, there's something else that we had a feedback from, I think you said, from one of the listeners.
I think it's more about the living expenses and him. So, you know, obviously we as brokers, we had to deal with living expenses, customer living expenses, the household expenditure measure, what we call HEM, HEM indicators. So they want to know a bit more about what should they do, what should they not do, what's important to banks and what's not so important to banks. So, you know, what are the red tapes in the living expenses area? Just so that for those who are conscious and, you know, wanting to get a loan 6 to 12 months down the track, they can obviously, after they listen to this episode, go, right, that's some actual actions that we can start taking today to ensure that we get a successful application.
Right, okay. So let's dig into that a little bit. Do you want to start and then I'll jump in?
Sure thing. I think the living expenses has been quite a area of scrutiny since the Royal Commission. Now, to track back a little bit of history, what happened previously is that this is talking about prior to 2015 periods. Brokers essentially take, and this is by no means to say this is brokers' fault. Brokers took the customer submitted living expenses as is. And basically they pass it through lenders. Lenders go, yep, no worries, that looks fine, and they don't do their due diligence as such. So some of the numbers could be ridiculously low. For example, you know, like you, I think some of the figures show that a single person living in Sydney renting could be living on about $1,100 a month.
Yeah.
And that is just ridiculously low. Like, you know, if you do some simple calculations, you go, where's this guy actually living? How is he surviving? So, and all that to be able to get the maximum loan amount approved. So that has been a big focus on that since the Royal Commission and APRA stepping in place and goes, why are you guys doing this? You know, we need to actually make sure that we have a standard to ensure that you know, we are assessing using the average household expenditure measure, and that's the HEM part, where that's where it comes in. We need to be able to use the HEM measure as a general indicator and compare that against what your customer is declaring. If your customer is declaring that it's lower than a household expenditure measure, why? You know, is that because what, something that you haven't declared? Is it something that we need to see in the statement to say that it's lower? Is there specific reasons why it's lower? And, you know, the household expenditure measure is basically done by, I think, statistics. Statistically, let's say, for example, you know, a couple with two kids, earning about 110, 120K might be on $4,000. And that's across, you know, surveys across Australia to say just that kind of demographics, how much on average are they spending? So that's how they come up, derived to that number. And if we have a customer today that's coming in, you know, a couple, two kids, again, on that similar income, then banks will say, okay, well, we need you to obviously do your verification on the customer expenses. And if they're lower than the HM figure, you need to justify why. And during our calculation, we still need to use the HM figure for servicing because, you know, as you know, banks are really conservative. So they want to make sure they use the worst case scenario. Even if your actual expenses are lower than HEM, we still need to be able to use the HEM to do your borrowing capacity assessment.
Just on the person living in Sydney declaring $1,100 expenses, of course you can, man. Just be on the beach, Bondi Beach.
Mate, what are you... Shall we do a hashtag challenge for Jazz to do that? I'm opening the polls to our listeners now, mate. I think you're probably a bit of an exception because you've obviously got some passive income coming in from other asset classes. But we're talking about just in general, you know, like someone who's earning a PAYG, haven't got much assets, and in that kind of scenario, then what should they be doing? So. Yeah.
Your point is pretty much spot on, David. I mean, you've covered most of that stuff from the HEM perspective. And it's in the past that things like every field, there's some crooks. So the field did got exploited where the expenses being declared were not meaningful at all. When you're a family of four with dependents, essentially, it makes no sense if you declare expenses of $1,500 because it's practically impossible when you've got a childcare cost or a school fee and other general living expenses otherwise. So I think banks have taken, and APRA has done a pretty decent job at that as well, that they have streamlined this process to some extent where there's a minimum now that they take into account. And if it's less than the minimum that the bank takes into account, they're happy to have the discussion at least. It's not that outright that is the minimum that we're going to take. Like I had a client who is getting settled next month, and his expenses being a single roughly about $2,000 per month outside the mortgage being the separate repayment. And the bank did ask the question that it looks like on the lower side, and there was a good explanation for that. And they looked at his bank statements and all that stuff. So there was no silly stuff like after pay repayments or zip money, which is, you know what, and there was no other credit card or personal loans at all. So if you can prove it, then banks will consider that and they will take into account the expenses that you have mentioned. But if you are not able to prove it or if your bank statements are saying something else, then it's not going to work. And going into the future, it's going to get even tougher to some extent with the open banking coming into place, where the banks, rather than relying at the moment purely on client or the broker, they can actually directly fetch that information through the bank accounts with banking, and they can exactly see what your repayments are, how many credit cards you have got, what the amounts are of those credit cards and all that stuff, and what sort of spending habits are. So all of that is changing, but it's for the good. In the past it has been exploited, whereas now it's pretty much streamlined to some extent.
Definitely, yeah, and you know, I think as you pointed out, the banks will want to see evidence to say yes, if it's lower, then you know, show us. And that's where if you're able to demonstrate it on your bank statement, so keeping a good history in terms of your living expenses, your lifestyle, you know, what you incur on a day to day level. So you know, I don't think banks will necessarily go into each and every individual line, but you know, just so for those listeners who's interested in terms of how we go through this process, I mean, we each have a living expenses worksheet, you know, breakdowns of different categories such as basic housing, property expenses, communications, media. So you know, that's for like the telephone, the mobile internet, the cable, the food, groceries, pets type expenses, which includes all food, grocery bills, all costs associated with pets, recreation, entertainment, clothing, personal care. So, you know, like all these categories, which we always, you know, for each of the categories, basically every application, we need to come up with an individual figure for each of these categories, because that's what banks ask us to populate in their expenses verification. And in order for us to arrive at that kind of figure, most of the time, you know, obviously we can pass that figure onto, we can pass that spreadsheet into onto your client. And this is where if you do some sort of budgeting tool, which will easily give you like what your roughly monthly spend is on each of the categories, and it makes it extremely easy because that work is already done for you. But in the worst case scenario, for someone who hasn't been doing maintaining budgets on that kind of stuff, that's where, you know, we can either go through as sit down and have a conversation to say, right, give us a bit of rough figure and we'll take that away and we'll validate that against your statements, your bank statements, your credit card statements, which is where you incur on your living expenses. And then we roll it up all together, all those categories, compare that against the household expenditure measure, the HEM figure, and say, okay, well, does it look like it's, you know, on average par to the HEM? If it is, fantastic, that's all good. If it's lower, then obviously we need to dig in a bit further why and be prepared to justify and understand why it's lower. And you know, if it's higher, then obviously, you know, that won't have an issue. If it's higher, it just means unfortunately your borrowing capacity will be going down. So it is a fine balance, as far as I know. I don't know about you, Jazz, but I'm finding it it's a fine balance. And some categories, such as, for example, IP expenses, can be treated differently for each individual lenders. Because I've got caught out on one of my applications where the IP expenses was not treated as part of HEM. So it wasn't treated as part of the household expenditure measure. It was treated on top of the household expenditure measure. And in this scenario, the client actually had about three investment properties. So each investment property that, say, on average is about $200 to $300 a month, depending on the strata fee, the council fee, and all that stuff. If you times that by three, it's quite a significant add-on to that. And, you know, the lenders said, so unfortunately in that case, you know, that was a bit of a surprise. We had to withdraw that application in the end. But, you know, keeping on top of all these things yourself is really going to help your broker with painting a good picture on when it comes to living expenses discussion and verification.
Yeah. And it's once again one of those exercises, David, where you really sit down with your broker and them honestly, whatever your situation is, because one way or the other, if not today, tomorrow you're going to get caught at that, right? So, and plus it's in the best interest of the client. So if the broker knows the whole situation of what exactly the living expenses are, they can actually go and fight with the bank in case where it's actually lower than the bank's minimum as well. But yeah. If you don't give the true picture, then it becomes a little bit difficult, obviously. And it's all to protect the customer at the same time from overborrowing or getting into this financial trouble. So that's good.
I think that's pretty much it, except just the, you know, you also touch on Afterpay and Zippay and all that kind of enjoy first, pay later facility. I mean, my general advice is if you are putting through some sort of loan application, get rid of them. They're not great. They're just not fantastic from lender's perspective, full stop. Because if you don't, then essentially the lenders will most likely come back to the broker and say, look, you know, we need your customer to either justify and say why they're still doing this. It actually comes down to more of a customer behavior. So think of it like you're actually demonstrating to the bank the mentality and the character of the borrower is actually an important attribute for the lender to determine whether they want to take you on as a borrower. If for a smaller amount, such as a smaller $50 purchase, you're going to have to actually kind of delay that purchase, then what's going to happen when it comes down to when you need to pay the mortgage interest and repayments? So that's the kind of concept that lenders go through when they see you've got Afterpay, you've got Zippay, these kind of facilities on your credit file. So that's why it's always important to make sure that if you do have it, and I know that for the younger generations, it's really a convenient thing, but if it's stopping you from getting a loan, then you need to make a decision in terms of which one is more important for you.
And look, this space is changing as well as possible changes. So we'll keep an eye on it and keep bringing the updates on this part. And again, it varies from lender to lender as well. So it's just something to watch out for. And if you're planning, like David said, if you're planning to purchase an investment property, your first thing to start looking at is your the monthly expenditure, essentially, to see where the things can be cleaned up, whether it's the zip money or the afterpay, or if there's credit card limits is the other thing. If they're too high, then that affects the borrowing capacity, but that's a separate story altogether. So all those things that can be cleaned up to be able to borrow once again. But yeah, we're going to keep an eye on it and keep bringing the updates as we go on this one.
Definitely.
Thanks once again for sending us all the questions and the feedback. We inundated with it and we super appreciate that. And hope you guys are enjoying the content. And please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and let the world spread like a fire. Spark your fire. Cheers, Jan and David. Bye.
Bye. If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.